Well, here I am again. It is Sunday, the 17th of March. My name is Bromo. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 2-17-09. I am not an expert by any means. I don't have any credentials or anything like that. I say this every podcast because I want people to know that I do this for the sake of others to hear stories of their experience and their strength and hope. It is about 23 degrees out here in Bismarck with little flakes and feathers of snow that are wafting through the air and not even landing. When they land on the ground, they immediately dissolve. I don't know if that makes any sense to my San Diego friends, but it is a beautiful day and it's another day of recovery. And I've got a friend of mine on named Jessica Rozell. Rozell. Did I say that right, Jessica?
Rozell, yeah.
Rozell, sorry. And you and I spent 2 minutes going over the pronunciation of your last name. I just butchered it. Rozell, right?
Correct.
Rozell. Okay. Jessica and I know each other years back. We've never met in person, but we've talked on the phone before, and she is actually from, are you from San Diego?
I'm actually from originally Northern California.
Okay, Northern California.
Yeah.
And now you live where?
Lexington, Tennessee.
How's the weather out there?
Today it's in the 50s. It's not too bad, but it's supposed to, we have a freeze warning coming up for tonight.
You know how that goes, and we get that a lot too, boy. Our weather always changes by the minute. Okay.
Yeah, we get all the seasons in one day.
Let me explain real quick. You probably wonder why I reached out to you yesterday out of nowhere. And she is a member, by the way, of There Is a Way Out on my Facebook group page. And for anybody out there that's listening to this who are not a member, I encourage you to send me an invite or even just try to go on there and become a member. I'm not sure how it works. It's been so long since I've had this page, but I would really like to have more people on our group page. You like our group page, Jessica? She's been a member for like 4 years, I think.
I love the group page. I go in there whenever I need some wisdom, and it's nice to hear other people on it as well.
Now, you probably wondered why I reached out to you out of nowhere yesterday, right?
I am kind of curious, yes.
I am going to tell you. I was going through Facebook, and you know, when you scroll and scroll and scroll, I saw your post. You said, here it is. Over 7 years, you don't mind me mentioning this, do you, Jessica?
No, I know. I don't mind at all.
She said, here it is, over 7 years since I've had a drink. I am craving one. Luckily, I have learned to say no. And that hit me right away. That hit me right away, the power of alcoholism and the power that Jessica and I and so many others go through, the urge every single day. Maybe not every day, but it's still in the back of our mind. You remember writing that, don't you?
I do remember writing that, yeah.
And I thought,
I had to get it off my brain.
Yeah, that's what we do. And I thought, how brilliant is that, that she posted that. Again, the honesty of this, of our disease is huge. And it's so important. You want to tell everybody your story, if you wish. You can start out whenever. You can go whenever. But do you want to tell everybody how you got started into drinking? And you've been at meetings before, and you've talked, and you've shared. You're more than welcome to do that right now if you want.
Okay, sure. No problem. So, I started drinking at a very young age. It started by sneaking. Sneaking, you know, well, my parents never really had a liquor cabinet, but I knew where they kept it, so I would take sips, and somehow that made me feel better.
Did your parents drink around you?
My parents weren't heavy drinkers, no.
Okay.
No, but they had it in the house, and they would have it every once in a while.
Do you have any brothers and sisters?
I did. I have two half sisters, and then some stepbrothers and sisters.
Okay, now you said you were going to back up a little bit. Do all the backing up you need, because sometimes I'll tell you, sometimes it's not easy when someone says, share, go ahead, share. You know what I mean?
Well, I was the oldest of my three sisters, you know, that I grew up in the house with. My mother has mental issues, so I was the mother. I practically raised my sisters, and
that's not easy to do at all.
No, not at all. Especially when, you know, they're, I couldn't do anything. I had to rush home from school and make them dinner, you know, all that stuff. I was mom.
They're relying on you.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And so that could be stressful. So, you know, I mean, there's some ways I had to, you know, feel better and, you know, I couldn't turn my brain off, all that. So one day, you know, I'm just like, oh, you know, I think there was some wine in the fridge or something. So I took a sip.
Did that calm you down? Did that make you feel, okay, I've got everything under control now?
Exactly. Exactly. It made me feel in control, even though I know I wasn't. But that wasn't when it was really bad. It was just sips here and there, you know, all that. It came. But that was my way of relaxing. And I was probably about 14, 15 at this time.
Right.
And then it's, you know, at school, unfortunately, I was a good kid usually, but I did, you know, I got along with everybody. So I got along with the, you know, bad crowd as well. And somebody asked me to hold a thermos of orange juice for them at school.
But it probably wasn't orange. Probably wasn't orange juice, was it?
Wasn't just orange juice, no. And so I took, you know, and then she told me what it really was. And so we would bring our orange juice in our thermoses, you know, almost every day to school.
Yep.
And I don't know how we never got caught, but it probably wasn't a very good idea. So, but then my drinking escalated. My grandma, being from a big Mexican family, you always had beer at any event. You know, it was a quinceañera. You had beer. There was a baptism. You had beer. So, you know, and so me and my cousin would go and sneak and get a beer and put it in a Pepsi can and drink the beer from a Pepsi can.
And how old are you at this point?
I'm probably 16, 17.
Reasoning why you're sneaking it? Because you don't want anyone to see you, of course, or know that you're drinking, right?
Exactly. My uncle did catch us one day, but didn't tell my grandma, thank God.
Okay.
We're sneaking it. We're hiding in my room drinking Pepsi, quote unquote.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and then after a while, just, you know, that's what made me feel better. So I would get friends who are older than me to buy it, and I would stash it in my room so my grandma wouldn't know.
Right.
Because I lived with my grandma at the time. And I wouldn't get deathly drunk, so I know I had to get up and, you know, go to school and do stuff in the, you know, morning. But that was my thing. When I came home, that's how I shut my brain off.
That's what you look forward to.
Yes, yes. I look forward to, it's like, okay, you know, okay, I get to go home. But, and I played sports and everything at this time, so I was still drinking while I was playing sports.
What'd you play?
I played soccer.
Awesome.
I played soccer in high school.
You know what? When I was in high school, man, I never could master soccer. Ironically, back then, I hated running. I hated the fact that you had to run from here to there. Nobody ever passed me the ball. And then, of course, eventually I became a long-distance runner. But go ahead. You were into soccer. So you were into sports.
Yeah.
You were hiding all this from everybody because, first of all, you're getting away with it. And it's
right.
It's what you look forward to.
Exactly. Exactly. I would look forward to going home and having a drink. So, you know, and so, so I just, you know, this happened for many years. Then I became 21. I thought, oh, goody, now I can buy it myself.
Now I can go out legally and buy it and bring it back. And now I'm 21. Why not drink in front of everybody? Everybody else is.
Yeah. Yeah. I was never a partier, though. I was never the one to go to a party and all that. I was a home drinker.
Yeah.
So if I did drink too much and pass out, at least I'd be on my couch.
Well, I was going to ask you, if you ever did go to parties, did you ever see pot or any other drug around?
I did, but I was never another drug kind of person.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I did smoke pot and all that, but I never, you know, like you know, I got offered, you know, cocaine and stuff, and I just, no, I did, but that wasn't for me.
Yeah, me too.
So, yeah, and plus, if I did, one time I did smoke pot and drink at the same time.
Yep.
I got deathly ill.
Oh, did you? Interesting.
I got deathly ill. I mean, I had never gotten, you know, if I did one or the other, I'd never gotten sick. But I did both of these together, in my friend's bathroom all night.
Did it make you paranoid? Like sometimes some odd things about pot is, for some, it made them paranoid, you know?
No, it didn't make me paranoid. I was just really sick.
Okay.
I couldn't eat anything. I just, it was awful.
Well, that's a good thing, if you think about it.
So, yeah. So instead of giving up the pot and the, you know, and the alcohol, I didn't do them at the same time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, you know, I'm like, okay, how's there a way around this so I can keep doing it? You know?
Sure.
So,
yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. And so, anyway, but no, alcohol was more my go-to. Pot was, if it was there, I'd do it. But if there's alcohol, I do the alcohol.
Right.
Yeah, because, you know, the alcohol works quicker.
So you're in your 20s, and you are legally able to drink. Are you now drinking in front of your family?
Yes, I am. I'm not drinking as much in front of my family. I go to family functions and have a couple, and then I go home and, you know, and have some more.
Have more, so, right. So
yeah.
So you know this. Pretty much everybody around you would have their drinks and then stop, but you would look forward to going home. So you can drink more on your own without anyone else knowing that you're drinking more. Are you still hiding drinks in your room?
Yes, I guess I am, because I'm living with other people, unfortunately. So yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and I would be in my room, and then I had friends who, you know, I went out with, and then, you know, we would go out, and, you know, they stopped drinking and I continue, you know. So
did you ever have an inkling back then that did you ever have a thought in your brain that, hey, you know, all my friends and stuff seem to have it to where they can stop at a certain point, but I seem to want to go on and drink more? Did that thought ever cross your mind back then?
I think it did. It was in the back of my mind, but I just blew it off.
Sure. Yeah, that's what we do. Yeah.
I just blew it off. Like, okay, yeah, I mean, I can stop anytime I want to. I'm good, you know.
Say that again. Say that again.
I can stop anytime I want to.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Why would you stop? Because first of all, you're not missing school or work or anything like that. You're drinking at home. If you do go to a party, whatever, you're being sensible and not driving. And so you got it under control, like you said.
Right. Yeah, well, like somebody said, I was a functioning alcoholic.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'll bet you nowadays you see the functional alcoholics around you, don't you?
Yes, I do. I see them all the time.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah.
I want to apologize if I interrupt you, so please.
You're fine. No, you're fine.
But I want to point these things out right in mid-sentence. But so continue.
Okay. So I would drink, and then after a while, one bottle of wine didn't do it.
Yeah, right. Right.
It barely got me buzzed. So I would buy the cheap stuff because, of course, you know, I wasn't, you know, making a lot of money. So I would buy a little bottle of the cheap stuff. I'd be like, I'm only a little buzzed. So then I'd go back to another bottle.
Well, you know, the real cheap stuff is the cardboard box stuff my mom used to bring home from the grocery store, the crummy cheap wine out of a cardboard box with that little lid.
Okay.
I remember that stuff.
Yeah.
Instant headache about 2 hours later.
Well, I worked at a place where they sold it cheap.
Okay, cool.
So before I left work, I'd grab a couple. So, you know, and I'd be like, okay, I'm off work. I deserve this. And I went home and drank them. So
you made yourself armed and ready with enough alcohol to know that if you had to go into a second bottle, no problem. It's right there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it didn't take me long to realize that one wasn't enough.
Right.
So I would be like, okay. Plus, they were cheap enough. I could get two.
Yeah.
Now, there were a couple times when I tried to do three. I've never made it through three bottles without passing out.
Blotto. Yeah, you know, here's the thing, and I've said this before many times. It's funny about an alcoholic, because I used to sit in my room almost blitzed with a full beer in my hand and one of those club martinis, you know, those little aluminum cans, And yes, I'd have I'd have another beer in an aluminum can in the cooler, and I used to say to myself, God, is this going to be enough? What do you mean is this going to be enough? And I'd wind up passing out with both of those in the cooler. I totally get
exactly.
Now, let me ask you this. When you were drinking into your second bottle of wine and you were drinking on a steady basis, did you ever find your mood changing?
Yes.
You did?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I found my mood changing, yes.
How so?
I felt a lot more relaxed, and I felt, you know, like the thing is, and, you know, and I did. I found my mood. It just, I was a lot more relaxed and all that, but I'm just, in my head, I'm thinking, okay, if I feel this good, if I have more, I'll feel even better.
Did people ever notice if you had too much? Or if you know?
At first, they probably did, but didn't say anything. They probably think, oh, you know, no big deal.
Yeah.
But after a while, I would go to functions, and my mom would actually, like, they'd be pouring the wine and give wine glasses out. My mom would take mine and said, no, don't give her any.
Interesting, isn't it? What, do you remember your first thought when that happened?
Wait a minute.
Yeah, were you embarrassed or defiant? Were you embarrassed or defiant?
I was more embarrassed. I didn't defy my mom.
No. You know what? I can tell by your personality immediately. However, I remember if I was approached or I remember if I had a situation like that, I would be at first defiant. Wait a minute. I've not had enough. Do you know I've had enough? Yeah.
Okay.
I totally get where you're at. Totally.
Yeah. No, it was out of respect for my mom and then my grandma didn't want me to, so it was out of respect for them.
Nice.
And in my head, I was thinking, I got a bottle home anyway.
Yeah. Right. So you can make it till you get home.
Exactly. I go. I'll be okay. You know. And of course, I made up for it later.
So how long did you continue on to this pattern?
Oh, geez, years. I did actually go to AA in my 20s. My daughter was little, so I was probably around 25.
How come? Did someone tell you to go? Someone ask you?
No, I realized that I wasn't, you know, functioning well, and I was functioning, but I wasn't functioning well.
Was it starting to scare you?
It was. It was starting to scare me a little bit, and I had my daughter. I had a baby in 2003, and so I stopped for a little while, and then I was stopped for almost a year, and then I went back to be like, okay, I stopped for a year. I can go back drinking casually.
Yeah. That doesn't work, though, does it?
No, it does not.
No. I mean, it works for normies, but it doesn't work for an alcoholic.
Exactly. Well, at this point, I didn't think I was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
I just.
So when you went to an AA meeting, what were your thoughts? Did you ever think to yourself, you know what, these people seem happy or they're smoking cigarettes and drinking a boatload of coffee, but that's them. I'm not part of this. Did you have that kind of mentality?
I did when I first went to one. I'm just, I don't know. I've been told it's cultish. I've been told stuff like that. And just like, yeah, so. But you know what? It was nice. I heard, you know, the person's story and, you know, and a lot of things rang to me. I'm like, wait a minute, that's me.
Yeah, you know, that's so true.
Yeah, so.
So you were being real to yourself. You should give yourself a pat on the back, man. I mean, you were being real to yourself. You were like,
Yeah, but that didn't last because I thought, okay, I'm better now. And, you know, and so I went back to drinking, and it started out steadily, you know, again, like, you know, I was, like it was before. I'd have a little, and then a little turned into a lot, and, you know, and then I go back to my buying habits.
We get to a point where we say, I'll just try to tone it down a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, and there was one, then it started getting where my daughter was getting older, and she started noticing. Like, I would put soda, you know, in a cup, and then I'd put I put a little more whiskey than soda. But
and she noticed that?
Yeah, she noticed that, and she'd want to sip of my drink, and I said, no, this is mommy juice.
Yeah.
I called it mommy juice.
Yeah.
And she noticed I was drinking a lot of mommy juice.
Yeah.
And so, So it got, and then she didn't like it. She goes, "Mommy, I don't like your drinking." I said, "Okay." So I didn't drink around her. I would wait till she went to bed. I would wait, you know, all that. But she'd wake up in the middle of the night and I'd be passed out on the couch.
Yeah.
So.
Let me ask
not
you
a good scene.
So how old was she? How old was she?
Oh, she was probably about 6 or 7.
I had a situation where when I had an ex-girlfriend and we thought that she was pregnant, okay, and I was drinking and this and that, and she said to me many times, "You got to stop drinking at a point at night because, quote, what if I wake up and I need to go to the hospital and you're passed out?" Now, do you think that made an impact on me? Heck no.
Of course not.
No, of course not. You're not going to tell me. You're not going to tell me to stop my pattern. Did anybody ever say to you, "Hey, Jessica, you got a daughter. What if you were to fall asleep and she needs you?" Did that ever run through your head?
It ran through my head a little bit, but no one ever did because no one knew the extent of my drinking.
There you go.
And I used to, you know, I used to tell my daughter, "This is our house. What happens at our house stays at our house."
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but I would make my daughter my scapegoat.
Well,
you know, and which I'm to this day, I'm very, very, you know, I'm very, very sorry about, you know.
We'll always have things we're sorry about, but that was a different time with you.
Yes.
And you know that. Anyway, sorry about that. I interrupted you again.
Okay. So it's okay. So I'm drinking for years and, you know, and then after a while I didn't hide it, you know, like, we would have events at our apartments when my daughter got older. She was in elementary school, and, you know, we'd all drink, and, you know, and everybody else would stop, and I wouldn't. So people started getting the, you know, impression, okay, she's, you know, she's not stopping. She's, you know. And finally, my daughter had talked to me about it, you know, because this was going on for years, and as she got older, she knew I had mommy juice and all that, and
yeah,
she would actually talk to my friends about it. And my friends would tell me, "Madeline's concerned. You know, Madeline says you're not yourself and all that." And,
oh, she's talking to other people, huh?
Yeah. But I was just like, okay. I was just like, but I get up, I go to work. I got up every day.
Yeah.
I mean, some days I felt like crap, but sure. I get up and go to work.
Did that bother you that she was talking to other people, or did that concern you?
It concerned me a little bit, but not really, because I'm in my head, I'm thinking I'm the mom.
Yeah, and first of all, that's no one's business but yours and your daughter.
Exactly. So, after we, you know, when she was in elementary school, and then when she got in junior high, it became like, you know, an every night thing. I'd come home from work and I'd have a bottle or two, or, you know, when it came time, you know. And I also feel really bad because there were times I went to the store and I had just bought a couple bottles of alcohol and my daughter wanted something. We had no money to get her that.
Yeah.
I would spend all the money on alcohol.
Well, that's what you needed. That's what had to be done. I can relate to that 1,000%, even though I never had kids. Yeah. I mean, you got to got to have for that night.
We went to the dollar store a couple times to get something to eat because that's all we had left.
Right.
And she would ask me for a toy or something. I said, "We don't have enough." And, you know, I mean, to this day, that questions me.
No, I know.
You know, all she wanted was a little dollar toy, you know.
How old is she now?
She is 20.
I am so looking. 20. She's heard you share before, correct?
Yes, she has.
Will you do me a favor and let her hear this podcast when we're done?
I will, definitely.
Because I'll bet you she's as proud as you know what over her mom.
Well, it's funny because when she turned 13,
yep.
I was engaged to a guy. We were, you know, we were doing good, you know, and he actually got tired of my drinking, and he reached out to some people to help me and all that, and that's how you and I met.
Right. This is a friend of ours who reached out to me. Do you mind me saying part of this?
No.
I won't mention any names.
Okay.
But I received, if I can remember, I'm so damn old, it's been so long ago, but I remember I was sober, of course. I want to say It was before I moved to North Dakota, I want to say. Maybe my first year. Anyway, a friend of ours reached out to me and wanted to know some danger points or some concerns on his part about you, because he was in love with you, and he didn't know what to do on his end. And he was frustrated because I think, which is natural and normal, I think he felt that he was competing against the bottle.
Right.
And I think he also felt he was reaching out to me to ask me if there's anything that he can do on his end. And I think I remember, go ahead and take it from there if you can remember what I told him. I believe I said to him, you need to talk to her about it. Let me, can I talk to her? And I think you and I had a conversation, can you remember what he said?
He gave me your number.
Yeah.
And I started, he wanted to know how to cope with it. It had become beyond a problem then.
He was not a drinker, was he? Or maybe a moderate, right?
Moderate once in a blue moon.
So let me ask you this. When he drank around you on the moderate times, didn't it make you really happy if he wanted to drink just a little bit more, so it gave you every opportunity to drink without any feeling of guilt around him? You wanted him to be like you kind of in that way, right?
Right. Right.
But he's not gonna. Yes. He's not gonna, because he's not an alcoholic. He's a normie with moderate drinking, correct?
Exactly.
So now he's torn, because what did he say to you?
He said your drinking is becoming a real problem. And it was funny, because there's one day I promised not to drink anymore.
Yeah.
And my daughter told me, Mom, if you drink some more, she was 13 years old at the time.
Yeah.
She goes, I'm going to go live with Grandma and Grandpa.
Oh, wow. Are you kidding? Well, I'm sorry.
That's stupid. I didn't believe her.
Wow. Wow.
She caught me drinking in my room that night.
Wow.
She called my dad, and he came and picked her up the next day.
Oh.
Yeah, talk about heart-wrenching.
How did you... This is a stupid question. How demoralized were you? And how much did you feel like I'm stuck. I know that I can't stop drinking right now.
Part of me was, I hate to say it, but part of me was relieved.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, now I can drink and she won't be around.
Sure. And she'd be safe and all that, right?
Right. Exactly. And she's with my parents.
But she's your daughter. And
right. Exactly. Exactly. Well, as soon as I sobered up and saw that she wasn't home, I was like, oh, you know, so.
How did all this make you feel? Were you crushed?
I was. I was extremely crushed. Well, I have my baby girl, so, you know, I mean, but, you know.
Is this your only children? Just one?
Yeah, my only daughter. Yeah, I just got one.
Okay, so now the boyfriend, is he still trying to hang in there?
We're trying to find a place together.
Yeah.
We were about to move into a place together.
Yeah.
And one night he came home and just said, you know what, you need help. And I'm just like, yes, I do. I mean, I've lost the most important thing in my life, which is my daughter.
Did you say that because you felt like you should, or did you say that because you were starting to realize maybe I do?
I was starting to realize maybe I do. I was like, you know, I mean, I don't think it hit me until I realized my daughter left.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, yeah, maybe this is a problem.
Did you feel you reached your bottom?
Yeah, I really did. I really did. I'm just like, you know, I just, you know what? I mean, if I have to choose between alcohol and my daughter, my daughter comes first.
But did you ever think to yourself, there is no way out?
There was no way out. This was my life, you know. This was how I call it self-medicating, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've done it for years. You've done it for years. You've coped with it.
Mm-hmm.
You felt relaxed with it.
Right.
It's, you know, it sounds stupid, but my counselor used to call it, that was my lover. That's your lover.
Yeah.
That's your lover.
That was my lover, and I could see how my, you know, ex-fiance could think he was competing with it.
Yeah, you know,
I loved alcohol more than anything or anyone.
I know, me too. You probably heard my story. I was given three chances. You keep drinking, I'll leave you. Keep drinking, I'll leave you. And she kept catching me. And then one day, she did what she said.
That was like my daughter, too. And I didn't believe her. And she called up my dad, and he came and got her. And she didn't talk to me for almost a year.
Wow. Okay, well, we'll talk about this in a few minutes.
Okay.
This is one of the rewards, and you know this. You're nodding your head at one of the rewards of sobriety. Okay, so now with your ex, your fiancé, did you guys find a place for you to go to get help?
We did, actually. I don't remember who he called, but he asked for some advice, and we both got on the internet and found a place. And they wanted me to leave that night.
Yeah.
But we were moving in the next couple weeks.
Okay.
So we put it off for 2 weeks.
Well, you're probably scared, too. You're probably thinking, I need help, but do I really want to do this now? I mean, do I really want to quit? I mean, I know
exactly.
I know I have to, but is there a life without alcohol and drinking? I can't see it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Do you mind telling me the place that you found?
The place I found was in Colorado. It was called Recovery Village.
Nice. And tell us about what Recovery Village is all about. Is that a 3 month, 6 month, year, or stay as long as you can?
I was there for 45 days. I think I was supposed to be there for 30. I think it was a 30 day, but I was there for 45.
I remember this time, I think. I think I was still talking to our mutual friend at this point. I think I remember him saying that you got into a place. He came out to see you, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Actually, he came out twice. He came out to see me once while I was there and then to come pick me up.
Now I remember. What was it like, Jessica, when you got accepted? Were you scared?
I was, because I don't know, here I'm going to a whole other state, not knowing anybody, you know, and, you know, some guy from the center is supposed to pick me up at the airport. I don't know who this guy is, you know.
Yeah. Was it, how many other women were there? Was it men and women?
It was men and women. There was a lot of us. It was an old converted hotel.
Yeah.
And it had two levels, and there were about three people to a room.
Was it one of those places where maybe they ran the first three or four steps by you and the 12th step and counseling and things like that?
Yes, I had counseling. They had equine therapy where I got to go out with horses.
Oh,
they
nice.
Yeah. They had a lot of good stuff. And that was the first time I'd ever been really around snow. So I didn't pack accordingly. So I didn't go outside much.
It's quite a jolt.
Yes.
When you're from a different city and you walk out and it's 15 degrees out, it's sunny. It looks from the windows, it looks like you can go out and take a nice leisurely walk.
Yeah. So, I had some really, it was really hard. And I had group therapy and then I had individual therapy.
Okay. And you stayed there for 45 days. In the middle of your stay, did you ever think, I don't know how I'm going to do this, or how much did you miss drinking? Give us some of your thoughts in your first couple of weeks.
I stayed so busy, I didn't really think about drinking, because they had an activity all the time.
Oh, cool.
But there's one counselor who really helped me get to the root of why.
Really? What did this person say to you? How do you feel the root was? What did this person say?
Well, I don't remember what it's called.
That's okay. You could just tell me if you can remember that.
It's like called EMDR or something, where they put these headphones on you that, you know, you listen to something, you know, something soothing, and then whatever comes out of your mouth is what, you know, you just think back and it's just like, it's like I saw my childhood.
Yeah.
And I saw exactly why I started drinking.
Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
You must have been going through a flood of emotions, right? You missed your daughter.
I missed my daughter. I missed my fiance.
You felt lonely for a little bit, didn't you?
I did. I didn't know anybody. Of course I felt lonely, yeah.
Let me ask you this now, 7 years later. Have you been back to this place to visit?
I have not. I want to, but I just haven't had the chance.
And that's what I was saying. When you left there, you probably said to yourself, man, I'm never coming back to this place.
But I still have actually friends that I met there.
See?
And we're still friends on Facebook.
Now it's like your own heaven out there. It's a place that...
Yeah.
It's amazing how time goes by and So you stay there.
I'm still friends with a lot of people who went there.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, good. Yeah. And they're still sober?
Some of them, not some of them. Yeah. Some of them, unfortunately, I've lost contact with.
Yeah. Well, they'll tell you, and they may have told you when you first started. That's a fact of life, unfortunately. I've said this a million times. I hope you don't mind me saying it again, but I remember when I first started going to Freedom Ranch and the teacher said, look around you, and there's 40 of us guys. He says, after about a year, if three of you are still sober, that's about the odds. I remember thinking, well, that's a bunch of BS.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some of you will be alive, dead, missing, or on the streets. And I remember thinking, oh, yeah, right, sure. But that's really about the odds.
Well, that happened to me because I went to an outpatient after I came back from Colorado, and it was men and women, I saw a lot of people come and go.
Yeah, outpatient is scary stuff.
Yeah. I was the last. It was women and men.
Yeah.
But after I graduated, they decide not to do women anymore. They decide to only do men.
Okay.
I guess women were harder than men or something. I don't know.
Now, what's your sobriety date?
I just went blank.
Oh, that's okay. It's easy to do when you're, talking about it. You've been so 7 years. You just reached seven years.
Yeah. Yeah.
You haven't relapsed since?
No, I have not.
You wanted to?
I've wanted to, but I've always talked myself out of it.
Why?
Or I've called. Because I'm not throwing away 7 years. I've worked so hard for this. I do not want to start over.
Okay, so someone's listening to this who's been told to listen to this, and they're listening, they're going, well, I don't know why you just can't have one there, Jessica. You've gone 7 years. Why can't you just start drinking and just have one or two? What would you tell that person?
I can't just have one. It's like the book says, one is too many and a thousand is never enough.
Yeah. And like you said, when she says throwing away 7 years, that could be throwing away 7 weeks, that could be throwing away 7 minutes. It's staying sober is the key, and mentally and physically, and this is where I bring in the rewards part, mentally and physically, as you stay sober and you see life opening up in front of you, i.e. getting your daughter back. She started talking to you again after she, a year of not talking to you, correct?
Yeah, about a year, then she started. Then I would reach out and ask my parents how she was and all that and ask if I could talk to her, and they said she doesn't want to talk to you.
Wow.
And, that kind of hit me in the heart,
Explain to everybody the first time you saw her, if you can, if you don't mind, after a year of not talking to her.
After a year of not talking to her, I saw her, I think I saw her at like a family event. And, she was very cold to me. Very,
Well,
I went to give her a hug and all that, and she was very cold.
They don't want to, it's really hard for them to trust again.
Exactly. She knew I went to treatment. She knew, I was sober. But she also knew that, I could fall off the wagon in any minute.
Yeah. Wow. She's pretty smart.
Yeah. She's a very smart girl. Very, very smart girl.
So
probably more smart than I gave her credit for.
Tell everybody the first time you saw the glow in her eyes when she started to accept you as a different person.
There was one day, because I used to, after a while, I would be like, can I come take you out to lunch? Can I come take you out to coffee? My daughter and all that.
Yeah.
And so one day she accepted, and I was like, okay, cool, And after that, she saw something, and then I kept texting her that, okay, I have 1 week, I have 3 months, I have, And, you know, she saw that I was trying. I said, do you want to come to a meeting with me? And she said, Mom, let's hang out. I said, okay, let's go to a meeting first. And she would come to a meeting with me. And, you know, she saw I was working it, and I was doing it.
Did she ever hear you speak?
I don't know. I don't think she's ever heard me speak, no.
Okay.
So I'm definitely going to share this with her. But no, I don't think she's ever heard me speak. But I remember one time I was getting my 1 year chip, and I invited her. And I remember we were in the car after, and she said, Mom, I'm proud of you.
Oh, how'd that make you feel?
Oh, it's all I could do not to start crying right there. You know, just, you know, like that made me feel great. If, you know, your daughter tells you she's proud of you, you know.
Well, that's a slow motion act of everything you've done for yourself, regaining trust from others, healthy,
exactly.
Staying sober, doing the right thing. That's everything in a slow motion deal right there. You'll never forget
right.
that. You'll never forget
and
that.
That was the, you know, other people are telling me they're proud of me, all that. But, you know, coming from her, just it meant more.
So in the course of that, are you remarried now? I mean, are you married
now?
I am. You are. How did that happen?
Yes,
do you mind?
No, I don't mind at all. I was living with I needed a place to live, and so I found a room in a house. And the lady who was one of my roommates, her cousin came over one day. And we talked, we started having fun, you know, all that. And he took him a long time to ask me out because he knew I was sober and he's not. And he's not a heavy drinker, but he drinks. And so it took him, you know, but we talked online a lot. We started playing actually Scrabble, you know, but online Scrabble, and we would talk while we were playing and all that, you know?
Yeah.
And, it just, you know, I wasn't even looking for somebody. I had broken up with my fiance about a year and a half before this. And, I don't know, it just happened. We all went out of a group at one time, his cousin, him, you know,
yeah.
And another friend of ours. And him and I ended up talking the whole night.
As your relationship grew, did you guys ever discuss your sobriety and his drinking? Because I'm sure you knew and you could tell that he's a normie.
Yes,
right?
I told him from the beginning. He knew from the beginning I didn't drink.
Okay.
And I told him, I don't care if you do, just don't, you know, just don't be sloppy and just don't be stupid.
Yeah.
Know? And all that. And actually, it's funny because one of our first dates was a bar.
Oh, isn't that something?
It's a bar and grill. And, you know, and he ordered a drink. I don't remember what he ordered. But it's funny because he went to the bartender and asked for a Coke. And the bartender looked at him, rum and Coke? He said, no, just a Coke.
Just a Coke, yep.
Yeah. So he got me just a Coke. And it was just, that actually became one of our favorite hangouts. And, you know,
yeah.
he would have a drink and I would have a Coke. So
I'm sure you feel the same way. I'm sure you're grateful for others when they find out that you don't drink anymore. And maybe they went to the trouble of finding out that you are a recovering alcoholic. You're probably grateful for those that are very, very attentive around you as far as, like, some will even ask you, you sure you're okay with this if I have this beer in front of you? And I always just, oh, of course. You don't need, yeah. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, you know what? There are people like that. Like my coworker, you know.
Yeah.
One day, I don't buy alcohol. I will not buy alcohol for anybody. I will not, you know. I just do not.
Right.
And then I don't like to be around it either. I mean, it's not because it's tempting. It disgusts me now. It just, ew. You know, so it reminds me of you
anymore. It's not the person that we know. No.
Exactly.
I will buy alcohol every once in a while for somebody. If it's like for a party, I'm bringing over a bottle of wine for that person. I have no problem doing that. But I know what you mean, though. The creepy part is flashbacks, bringing back memories of when I relapsed and I had that walk over to the counter shaking with a six-pack of beer because I knew I was about to relapse and I was buying it. In my mind, I already relapsed. Yeah. So as time goes by and sobriety goes by, I can buy someone a bottle of wine here and there. It doesn't bother me. But everyone's different. I love your protective ways, though, because
I don't do it. It's not a priority in my life anymore.
Right.
And it's just like, you know, and just I just you know, and if I get, it's not a necessity for me to buy. You know, other people can buy their own alcohol. I don't need to buy your alcohol.
And you know what? That's a reward of sobriety, and that's something that that you found in Colorado.
Yes.
And through weeks and weeks and months and now 7 years of not drinking, not picking up that first drink, right?
Right. Yeah.
You know, when you first went to your very first AA meeting, I'm sure things didn't hit you until you were in your treatment center in Colorado and you heard people share. And then that really kicked something into high gear and you heard someone where you can relate to, right?
Correct. Yes. Yes.
Isn't that amazing? That's amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing. It is amazing. There was actually a couple AA meetings when I got sober that first year. I mean, I totally cried in one. I heard someone share and I started bawling.
Well, you know what? It's fine. Any kind of reactions towards anybody's share is really really emotional and personal, because we can all learn something. Well, this is what's great about our deal, is we can all learn from no matter how many years you have.
Yes. Yes. Yeah,
and this is
why. But no, I felt like she was. I felt like she was talking directly to me.
Talking to you, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever have anybody come up to you and say, Jessica, you know, it's hard for me to ask you this, but I have a friend or maybe a family member. Maybe they're asking for themselves. Do they ever ask you what you recommend?
Yes, I've had friends message me. I've had friends ask me. You know, I mean, I think my drinking is getting out of control. I think, you know, what do you recommend? And I said, hey, let's go to a meeting. I take them to a meeting, or, I said, okay, well, you know, I get them in touch with somebody, or, you know, one of my sisters had a drug abuse problem, and she just showed up at my house one day, and we spent all day trying to find her somewhere to go.
And that's something. See, this experience that you have sharing with other people, and it'll come out of nowhere. It'll come from somebody maybe you work with or someone you run across. Again,
and then somebody you least expect.
When your daughter stepped away for a year, she was 13.
She was 13. Yes.
What an amazing person to have that strength to say, "Hey, I can't be around my mom." Watching my mom not be my mom and being somebody that's being led by alcohol.
Right. At that time, I was very mad at her. But now, over time, I you know what? She's stronger than I would have ever been at that age.
Well, she saved your life, and you saved your own life. And
exactly.
Your friend, our friend, helped save your life as well. And if our friend is listening to this, I'm hoping our friend is happy and doing what this person is doing. There is no competing against somebody who is not ready to stop yet. Isn't that the bottom line?
No, if that is it. You the person has to want to stop. You can't stop somebody. You know, and you know, you're gonna wear yourself out.
Well, you just, and it's just there's some sort of force behind it all. You just can't do it until that person genuinely looks at you and says, I'm beaten up, I've reached rock bottom, I've lost everything, I can't even see my daughter anymore, I'm ready.
Exactly.
And boy, those people in Colorado saw you coming in and you were ready.
I was ready. It's funny because I purposely didn't take my bank card, and I purposely didn't take a lot of money. I took $20 with me on the plane.
Yeah,
and I bought a Jack and Coke on the airplane on the way over there.
Yeah, well, you got to.
I knew.
Got to get the edge off.
Yeah. I knew. I was going to get sober, so I said, "Okay, here's my last drink on the airplane."
Isn't that something? That's so true.
That's why my sobriety date is February 3rd, 2017, because I was on that plane on February 2nd.
That is amazing, isn't it?
Yep.
I mean, there is a way out, right, Jessica?
Oh, there is a way out. There is a way out. You just have to want to get out.
You have to want to do it for yourself.
Exactly.
And you have to want to see that that life can't control you anymore. You can control life up to a certain point. And it's a much better life, isn't it, Jessica?
Oh, it's a much better life. I mean, you know, I'm just, you know, I don't think I've ever been this happy.
Well, you deserve it.
I've got a great relationship with my daughter.
Yeah.
I've got, you know, a wonderful man. We just moved into a new place. So, you know, I mean, you know, I'm loving living in Tennessee. I'm loving living in a new place. It's wonderful.
Love it. Well, you deserve it.
Thank you.
I'm going to end with this. If anyone's listening right now, someone says to them, hey, this goofy-looking guy's got this podcast called There Is a Way Out, and you know what? Blah, blah might have a problem with drinking. Let's let blah, blah hear it. What would you tell people right now listening that says to them, wow, my life is a complete mess. It's spiraling out of control. I don't know what to do. I think I need help. I don't know how to go about it. What would you tell people?
I'd say reach out. Reach out to people. Listen to a podcast. There are a lot of resources out there. I was afraid to ask for help. I was always a do it by myself person.
Yeah.
I still have problems asking for help. It's like, you know, I mean, my husband tries to do something for me and, you know, I'm just like, oh, I have to stand back and let him. I still have problems with that.
Yeah.
You know, so, but, you need help. You need to reach out. Luckily I had, a big old kick in the head,
Yeah.
So that's what I call it. And, but not everybody's going to get that.
No, you know what? And like you said, I was afraid to ask for help. And that very first step could save your life.
Yeah, I was afraid to ask for help. Yeah. Because I had always done everything on my own. I said, oh, I could do this too.
Yeah, and you know what? In the long term, someone once told me, no matter how long it takes to get your feet on the ground, because I was over a year in two different recovery homes, and someone once told me, you're taking a brief time away from life to get healthy. And isn't that worth it?
It was. I mean, 45 days is a long time.
It is a long time. It's a long time to be away from home, friends, family, all of that. But it saved your life.
I had a really good support system, and I still have a really good support system.
I know you do, I'm honored that you came on to share. You know that?
No problem. Well, thank you for asking me.
Well, of course. Hang on real quick, Jessica. Thank you. Okay. Hang on real quick. This is a marvelous lady. I'll tell you, this is why I have people come on and share. You just heard from Jessica. She restored her daughter. Everything is worth restoring. You can do it. Like she said, all you got to do is reach out for help. Again, my name is Bromo. Thank you so much for listening. I'm very proud of this podcast for people like Jessica and others who come on here. Remember, there is a way out.